Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. And Nick and Danny are both gone. So we got the only person who is man enough to take both their places at once, and that is Will Graham.
Woo!
Yeah, last seen plunging off of a cliff in the arms of a cannibalistic serial killer. How you doing?
Oh, doing good.
Beautiful.
So sad there's no more of that show.
Oh, man.
So man, sad. Ending.
We still might get more. Don't hold your breath for it, but we may get some more.
I like the way that it ended, at least.
I like to imagine that they survived, and they're just living together in Greece.
Yeah, they're murder husbands.
Murder husbands.
They're strong swimmers.
They've got a dog that they're just like taking care of, and they sometimes joke that it's their kid. You know. Anyway.
And then Hannibal chases the dog around going, "I'm going to eat you. I'm going to eat you."
Han.
Really awkward when they go to meet like Will's extended family, and Hannibal's like, "Your baby is so cute. I want to eat him all up."
Where'd your nose go? Where'd your nose go?
Okay, so Hannibal Love Minute is over. Today we will be talking about Black Mass, the newest film starring Johnny Depp as real-life criminal mastermind and one of the FBI's most wanted until he was caught, Whitey Bulger. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the career of Johnny Depp in general. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone to comment and rate us on iTunes. As always, you can find us on thefilmstage.com and comment on the pages that are posted for these podcasts. We wanted to draw special attention, actually, to a comment that was left about a month ago. We are just noticing it now. And that is on our episode about The Tribe, the film that was done entirely in sign language, taking place in a deaf school in the Ukraine. I won't read the entire comment, but a listener, I will use that term in air quotes, I guess, Hank, actually commented, and he is deaf.
Yeah.
He had a friend interpret the podcast for him because he was very interested in The Tribe. And he gives a lot of good context to at least the way that deaf culture and deaf schools operate in the United States that I think will be an interesting read for anyone who saw The Tribe and was interested to learn more.
I gotta say, I'm really touched that he went to all that effort to listen to this podcast.
It makes me wish that we were a better podcast.
Oh, God. We did make a couple kind of tasteless jokes. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
It was all in good fun, but yeah.
Some real hardcore microaggressions in that podcast. And just some mega aggressions too. We were not kind. We're not good people.
Yeah, y'all were not kind to the movie nor
that. Well,
culture.
To be fair, it wasn't so much like the movie was rough. It was a rough movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so I mean if anyone knows Hank, or if you were the interpreter, if you are Hank's interpreter, please tell him that we really appreciated his feedback. It was really awesome.
Yes, it was. And of course, you can also email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So that is it. Let's talk about Johnny Depp, guys.
Yeah!
Johnny fucking Depp.
Good God.
What is there to say about Johnny Depp? What do we think about Johnny Depp?
Who chooses his movies?
That's a good question. It's really hard to know what to make of this man. The common joke is that he'll take any movie that puts him in either a funny wig or a funny hat and lets him do a weird accent.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been in some normal stuff. I mean, as early as 2009, he was in Public Enemies. Granted, he got to wear a hat, but everyone in that movie got to wear a hat. So I don't know what to make of that.
He did have an accent, too.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah. But it wasn't like... You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
He's
Pirate's joke.
In the movie that we're constantly threatening to do a drunk podcast on, The Ninth Gate, which is amazing.
I've never watched The Ninth Gate.
Oh, it is.
He has long hair and wears a hat at several points, doesn't he?
He does, and he wears weird glasses.
Yep.
And again, my favorite thing about
those
that
are
movie...
those are his glasses, by the way.
Oh, are they?
Are they?
I assume.
My favorite thing about that movie, it's about rare book dealers, and no one can stop smoking and ashing directly onto 100-year-old manuscripts. He was also in Donnie Brasco, which, again, a low-key
Brasco,
normal movie.
You mean?
Brasco? Brasco?
Brasco?
I haven't seen it in a while. I don't remember how they pronounce it. So, what is it with Johnny Depp, man? See him on a marquee, do you say, I want to see that movie?
No. Especially when it relates to Tim Burton. Let me ask this.
Not a fan
Do
of
y'all
Dark
think
Shadows,
he's
obviously.
A good actor?
Difficult question. Is Nick Cage a good actor?
He's definitely... I think there's a difference between being an actor and being a movie star. And Johnny Depp is definitely a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
In every sense of the word. To the point where... And I think... I will say, I think he at least has fun with his fame, which I always like when, you know, people avoid going the Shia LaBeouf route where fame has become a burden and it's crushing them. People, you know, when you're famous, you get to go do really fun things like put on silly hats and dress up in silly makeup, which I think Johnny Depp, he really enjoys himself. And he also does stuff like a movie that I am a weird champion for, which is the Adam Sandler movie Jack and Jill,
Why are you a champion?
What
for
it
is
it is talking about right now?
Podcast on hold. Let's avant-garde. This.
No, just wow. Because it is not a champion per se, but I will say you should watch it just because it is so strange and so it's like avant-garde. It is so weird, and Johnny Depp is in it, and he plays himself. And
right.
like a pretty exaggerated version of himself. So he's aware what people think of him. I think he just doesn't care. And also, I don't know. I will say, though, probably one of my favorite Johnny Depp movies is Sleepy Hollow.
I was going to say Fear and Loathing.
Fear and Loathing.
Fear and Loathing, man. Gotta have it.
Yeah.
Sleepy Hollow is good. I enjoy Sleepy Hollow.
He plays a very skittish character, which I like. Because I feel like he doesn't usually play characters like that.
Secret Window's pretty good.
Blow is really good.
Blow is really good.
Oh, I disagree.
See, this is the thing. Like, he's in good movies, but aside from one or two of them, I don't know that they're good because of him.
Well, here's my constant refrain is, name me the last great Johnny Depp movie.
Rango.
Rango was really good.
Okay, but that was an animated movie.
That's true.
We'll pass on that.
What's the last really good Johnny Depp movie? Jeez, that's a good question.
Transcendence?
No.
Into the Woods?
No.
No.
Alice in Wonderland?
No. Brian.
I know, I'm fucking with you. I would go to bat for Public Enemies.
Really?
Wow. Really?
I would say...
Did you say
love...
great?
Maybe not great. I mean, it's really like, fantastic.
Now... Go ahead and name Leonardo DiCaprio. Go ahead and name Jake Gyllenhaal. Go ahead and name just about any other top marquee actor out there right now. And
even
you
Nick
look
Cage
at the output, and it's just so odd that this guy basically has the ability to basically make a movie by himself, right? Mm-hmm. If you put him on a marquee, it's going to sell tickets. And it's like, why doesn't he make better movies? I don't know.
Fucking have to.
No, he doesn't.
Well,
and I think his box office appeal is waning a bit.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Mordecai tanked.
Yes, it did.
Oh my God, did it ever? Wow. Nathan Raven wrote a really funny piece about that.
Wasn't that also rated R, though?
Was it?
Was it? Why?
Let me click on it and find out.
So
I'm staring at it too.
Well, it was definitely a miscalculation with the marketing.
Yeah,
because
it is R-rated.
Why?
I don't know. And that kills your ability to make money off of a movie, especially if it stars Johnny Depp.
Especially if it looks like a kooky, like, it almost looks like Mr. Bean or something. It's
a level of
comedy.
Yeah, it looked like Mr. Bean or the Pink Panther.
Yeah, like Pink Panther. That's a better example.
Movies that he's headlined recently. I mean, you got Dark Shadows, The Lone Ranger, Transcendence, Mordecai.
The Lone Ranger was upstaged by a horse in Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
A horse.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
The Rum Diary was awful, and that was returning to his Hunter S. Thompson. I don't know. It's hard.
It was a dialed down Hunter
S. Thompson. Let's not forget about that.
I mean, honestly, the last great movie that I can name for certain off the top of my head is going to be the first Pirates movie. The rest of them have been trash.
You give me a challenge about Public Enemies, but you're going to go to bat for Pirates?
Oh, Pirates.
The first Pirates?
Terrible.
Yes. No! What?
I hate all of the Pirates movies.
I hated that movie when I first saw it, and everyone else was pure in love with it. And I was like, oh God, what's wrong with life?
It's too, they're all so long.
Yeah.
No, the first one's
so terrible.
Are you kidding me? The first one's like more than 2 hours. I was going to say something crazy. It's an hour. Oh, it's 143 minutes. So it's almost 2.5 hours.
Boom.
And it should have ended at least 40 minutes before that.
Oh, so annoying.
That's still a long movie. You said 2 hours, bro.
Well, I thought you said an hour and 43 minutes.
No. 143 minutes, which comes to 2 hours and 23 minutes.
Okay, that is long.
That's a long movie.
That's a long movie.
It's a long ass movie.
Agreed.
Isn't that as long as Black Mass?
Black Mass is 2 hours and 2 minutes.
God,
that feels longer.
Way too long.
Way too long. I'm going to tell you something right now. I have seen every movie that we're going to talk about for the next 3 weeks. And I think that every single one of them is like 2 hour and 1 minute or 2 hour and 2 minutes.
Are we talking about Sicario?
Yeah.
Sicario, I feel like, should be pretty long.
Yeah.
That's the one movie where I'm like, yeah, that should definitely be.
Sicario is 2 hours and 1 minute. Everest,
really?
I believe, is also 2 hours and 1 minute. I don't know if this is like just a weird, kooky coincidence or if it's production companies keeping a tight rein on the editors. But
I think in general, you're going to be a more successful rated R movie if you're right at that 2 hour mark.
That's probably true. And when I saw Black Mass, I saw a bunch of trailers and all of them were like based on a true story. This is the true story of blah, blah, blah. And I am beginning to think that making any movie out of a true story is a terrible idea because no one knows how to do it right.
Well, and also, and I actually wrote an article about this a while back. A lot of times people will make films based on true story films because they're just more Oscar worthy for some reason.
Yeah.
Like if you look at any Oscar winner, any Oscar nominee over the past, probably like, I would say like, at least 5 years. There's just tons
there will
of
always
like
be a true story.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
Which is
they're riddled with them.
Which is why Black Mass and Everest. I can't legally talk about what I thought of Everest, but there are a lot of character actors in it, and like a lot of
Whitey will come for him.
But like Everest has a lot of top tier actors in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people in that. There's a lot of people in Black Mass.
Wow. Yeah.
And this is because it's kind of the shotgun approach to going for an Oscar. It's like, well, if Johnny Depp doesn't get it, if Joel Edgerton doesn't get it, maybe we can depend on Benedict Cumberbatch or Kevin Bacon or Peter Sarsgaard or Jesse Plemons or Rory Cochrane.
Jeez.
Or Adam Scott. Adam Scott is in Black Mass.
Dude.
Corey Stoll.
Corey Stoll.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Really weird.
He's technically in Black Mass.
Juno Temple in a classic Juno Temple role.
I love her so much.
Bless like, her
she's
heart.
She's so good in so many things, and they keep...
She has very limited roles in everything she does in
she's
Atonement,
like a modern
in
day...
Dark Knight Rises, in...
Well,
the...
oh, yeah.
Well, don't say that. Spoilers, asshole. Now I'm going to have like... to cut that out. But anyway, yeah. So we'll get into Black Mass, but I mean, what? Yeah, as far as Johnny Depp, I mean, when was the last time you were emotionally moved by Johnny Depp?
Good God. Jack and Jill.
Look, he's
are you
got
kidding
some
me?
Really, God damn. He's got some great scenes in this film, though. Like, and that's what I'm saying is he's clearly a good actor that's just looking for the right role, and he keeps choosing the opposite of that.
Right.
Like, just over and over and over and over and over.
Oh, Finding Neverland. Can't forget about that.
I don't think that he cares. Like, I will say, I really don't think he cares about winning awards.
Oh my
God. Don't
no.
think he cares no. about being, like...
But I think he wants people to think of him as a good actor.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are actors...
And appreciate his fucking movies, right?
Yeah. Like, but there are definitely actors who take roles where it's very obviously a bid for... an award where it's very obviously, you know,
this movie gave me J. Edgar shivers all over.
Ooh,
because it's like, oh, let's take this very attractive, charismatic leading man and slather him in old age makeup.
Ooh, yeah.
And tell a 20-year or a multi-decade spanning story about him. And yeah, it's just not working. We seem to be eager to plunge into it.
Yeah.
So we should probably talk about the newest Johnny Depp film, Black Mass. If you have opinions on Johnny Depp, if you think we're being overly harsh, let us know. You can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com or you can tweet at us @filmstageshow. However, let's do the fucking thing and talk about Black Mass, which, co-stars every name that I said earlier and, is directed by Scott Cooper. Here is the trailer.
I need to know everything you know about the Winter Hill Gang, and specifically what you know about your former boss and now fugitive, James Whitey Bulger.
Well, let's start.
In the beginning, Jim was a small-town player. He's a very smart, disciplined man.
Take your shot, but make it your best. Because I get up, I eat you. I'm at
the table, you can come and lay your. And the next thing you know, he's a damn kingpin. You know why? Because the FBI let it happen.
I grew up with Jimmy and his brother Billy, the senator. And
so that's the trailer for Black Mass, the newest film starring Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger, co-starring Joel Edgerton as an FBI agent who is working with Whitey Bulger, and Benedict Cumberbatch as Whitey Bulger's brother. For people who don't understand why I'm laughing, Whitey Bulger is the crime kingpin of Southie, Boston, who served as an inspiration for Jack Nicholson's character in The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that, and then make Benedict Cumberbatch his younger brother. Benedict Cumberbatch shows up in this movie putting on a Southie accent,
trying to
sound like Matt Damon from Good Will Hunting. There's going to be a lot of that. Get used to it. Let's talk about what we thought of this film. Let's start with Amanda. Ladies first. What did you think?
Oh, well.
What did you think? Oh, a Black Mass.
Before I begin, I just scrolled through Johnny Depp's credits. We forgot to discuss Tusk. Apparently he was
did not talk about Tusk.
Let's not.
That's
ever. You know,
speaking
that
of
not
career
skipped
missteps.
Over, that was omitted.
Oh God, Black Mass. So here's the thing. I find the story of Whitey Bulger's career, life, his apprehension, everything incredibly fascinating. Mm-hmm. It is like something out of a movie. It is larger than life. It's just incredible. And so I watched the documentary, Whitey. It's the Joe Berlinger documentary. Whitey. Netflix. What's that? Yeah, it's on Netflix. Whitey, United States of America versus James J. Bulger. Thinking like, oh, this is going to be so incredible. You know, I'm going to, you know, this is going to be so captivating. Very boring documentary.
That's sad.
It's incredibly boring. So I was like, I can't believe you made a boring documentary about something so just, I mean, just reading about like everything that happened, even after he was apprehended, people were still being killed.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, it is just, like I said, it is like something out of a movie already. So when they made Black Mass, I thought, oh, okay, maybe they'll get it right. Maybe they'll really capture just how, you know, intensely fascinating this is. And I gotta say, this is an incredibly boring movie. I was very bored the entire thing. Yeah. And I think the reason why is because you're really just, you, like, when you have something like this that is already so, like I said, so larger than life, so, you know, like something out of a movie, you really can't do it justice. I mean, there's really nothing you can do. And I'm not really sure why they chose to go the route that they did, because I feel like this is such a story-driven film as opposed to a character-driven film.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and that is just so, I feel like that was the wrong way to go about it, because even the times when we spend with Whitey as a character, I guess we're supposed to have sympathy for him, because he has one young son who dies of Ryers syndrome. I looked it up. It's Ryers syndrome. Anyway, and Dakota Johnson plays his girlfriend. His baby mama?
Yes.
I don't think they're married.
They don't appear to be married. No one ever makes mention of his wife.
Yeah, so I think...
I don't see any rings.
Yeah, I think she's just his girlfriend.
His slam piece.
Wow. Okay.
Wow, way to insult Dakota Johnson's character in this movie. Like, but that's the thing, I'm calling...
She's Anastasia Steele.
Oh, no.
No,
but he's like, he's such a, you know, the first probably like third of the film, you're meant to believe that everybody in Southie loves Whitey Bulger, that he is community minded, that he has a brother in the Senate, that, you know, and that's the reason why Joel Edgerton, who plays Agent Connolly, who grew up in Southie and knows Whitey personally, decides to form an alliance with him and use him as an informant. But there's never really, other than like, there's one scene very early on where he's like, is that Mrs. Cody? And there's this old
please do the rest of this podcast in your Whitey Bulger voice.
Please, yes.
I can.
All the Oscars.
We should all attempt for the rest of this podcast to just do the South Boston accent.
Do the masshole accent.
For the rest of this podcast.
Oh my God. Oh. But so he gets out of the car. He has his henchmen pull over so he can get out of the car and go up to this old lady who is wheeling her groceries. And it is like something out of a Warner Brothers James Cagney gangster pick. The way that that woman talks, she's like, oh, Jimmy, when did you get out of Alcatraz? I was like, what era are we in?
Her first line was like, oh, as I live and breathe. Is that James Bulger?
Like, I was expecting an Irish cop to come down the street and be like, you better not be...
Swinging his billy club.
Swinging his billy club.
Oh, Faith and Begora. Is that James Bulger? You better keep your nose clean, lad. We're all watching you.
Oh, my God.
Saints preserve us.
Someone's practiced that.
I once went through an entire Boy Scout camp and pretended to be Irish, and no one found out.
That's terrible.
It was bad, and I didn't lay it on thick like that. I you know, was normal about it. But
oh,
I can do a stereotypical
You wanted so much
Irish
attention.
Accent.
when you were a kid. Yeah,
I'm sorry, so lass. Get back to your opinions on the film.
Oh my god.
I'm loving this already. Yeah, it is just like, but it's just that level of like weirdly like old fashioned filmmaking. It's just so strange and cartoony. And then like the whole movie is just basically you spend so much time with Joel Edgerton's character, who is butting heads with the other FBI agents who are saying, oh, you know, Whitey isn't a good informant. He's not giving us anything. And you're letting him get away with all this stuff. It's basically just Joel Edgerton justifying why they need to keep Whitey as an informant. That's like half the movie. It is so annoying and it is so repetitive. And
my
like,
girlfriend at some point, you know, we've been seeing a lot of these movies together and she's like, well, what are you going to say on the podcast? You know, and then as she's, you know, we've talked more about movies, you know, we've come into this kind of repartee where we'll each say like what could have been trimmed and what we would have added. And she was like, we only needed like two scenes of that.
We didn't need
like an hour and a half of, I don't think Whitey's a good informant. Whitey's a good informant. Oh, okay. He's a good informant. All right. He's going to keep informing. All right.
He's going to hand us over the mafia.
Like, oh, man. It's so annoying and it's so unnecessary. And then like you have all of these actors, like you have Kevin Bacon, who's fine. He's there. He's doing a thing.
Crap, I forgot he was even in this.
Exactly. And like Adam Scott is there. Why? Why is Adam Scott there?
He wears a pencil mustache better than anyone in the business.
He looks Weasley as he looks real bad.
And I think you're supposed to think that about him, but he never does anything that's like...
He doesn't do anything.
No, because Joel Edgerton is doing it all.
Yeah.
And so, I will say this much. So, I actually tweeted about this earlier, but my fiance he really has it in for Peter Sarsgaard. He hates Peter Sarsgaard.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, you just want to see this movie because you want to see Sarsgaard get wrecked. Like, you really want to. And so, and he does. He gets real wrecked in this movie. But, like, he doesn't do anything. He has, like, two lines. And they're mostly, like, mumbled because he's a cokehead.
He's coked out most of the time. And he's super coked out. That was one of those things where my girlfriend said, like, was that necessary? Could they have just not cut all of that?
Yeah.
They could have cut half of this cast.
And here's the thing.
What does he even do?
Well, that's kind of the problem with the movie as far as I saw it. No one does anything. And what I mean by that, like if Nick Newman were here, he would make some kind of asinine argument. Like, what are you talking about? They're doing things all the time. but what I mean by no one does anything is that we never see anyone in process.
Yeah.
They're constantly existing in a static moment. So we hear like, oh, you know, it's weird because Whitey, he used to be like just this street level gangster. And then later on, he became the king of Boston. And how do you think that happened? Well, the FBI let it happen. And the thing is, like, but he doesn't change at all. The places he goes don't change at all.
Right.
And his actions don't change. Like, we don't see him, you know, as a low-level scraper beating the shit out of bookies or breaking legs to collect on book, and then he becomes like a fucking cocaine importer. He just always stays this gray-haired, shark-eyed sociopath who's hanging out at his ma's house and
playing cads.
And playing gin. And like, it's just, his position never seems to change. And we only know of the non-murder crimes that he's doing because people keep saying it. And I don't know if they were trying to make us think, oh, what if he's not really a bad guy? I'm slipping into my shitty Boston accent just out of habit now, so I apologize.
Oh, please do. Please do. Just do it.
It seems like, you know, what are we supposed to believe that maybe he's not as bad as everyone's saying he is until everyone says it again, but with more conviction? Like, why aren't we seeing him make these, you know, dope deals that are apparently, you know, flooding high schools?
Yeah. We don't even know that that's a thing until the end.
This is a very pro Whitey Bulger movie.
It is, but that's the weird thing.
If you look at this movie and you realize like how much is actually his fault, and it's like hardly anything. Like there's so much ineptitude on so many different levels all across the board
that have
basically allowed him to get to this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the movie kind of posits that he's just a knucklehead who's hanging out with three other guys who sometimes, you know, he kills people. They have the whole highlight thing.
Oh God, that highlight thing.
I don't understand. Like they didn't give any context for highlight in America.
There's no enemy throughout this entire film. Like he keeps battling the mafia and keeps trying to like push them out of South Boston. And the whole time you're like, well, I think there's one scene where you see a little bit of the repercussion, and then that's it. And it's like, where's the terror? Where's the dread? Where's the
exactly?
I mean, these are gangsters, and yet at no point did I ever feel that Whitey Bulger, at least in particular, was ever at risk of anything.
He was never at risk of any gang reprisals. He never seemed to be doing anything, and it's.
I don't think he gets a finger like a paper cut like throughout this entire movie.
It's true. Yeah. He has other people count his money for exactly that reason. He doesn't want to get a paper cut.
He's a very clean man, as we see in the very first shot of him watching one of his associates eating a bowl of peanuts.
Oh, that's,
God, I love that.
That's Dan from Deadwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. But that's like the thing that this movie has so much talent. Like Jesse Plemons is
in a fantastic wig and a funny like fat suit.
He probably delivers the most understated performance for what little he does, you know, and you have him and you mentioned earlier, Juno Temple is in this. Juno Temple is in it for a few scenes. She's
fantastic.
She's fantastic. And she's like a modern, I think of her as like a modern day, like Tuesday Weld.
I love her accent too.
Yeah. She's great. She's so like genuine. So like guileless. But yet she's this prostitute who's sort of like driven into prostitution by the fact that one of Whitey's henchmen is her shitty stepfather who basically molests her. And she's just so like, she's a great character and she's in it for like 3 minutes and then she's basically squandered. But she's like, I think of her as like a modern day Tuesday Weld where she's this beautiful, super talented actress who's never really got a really good big role. Like she's in a lot of movies, but she's just never given like a good role in a big budget film.
Yeah.
And she's just squandered. And this whole movie is just like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm just watching a bunch of actors do accents for the most part, except for her and Jesse Plemons. I think those were, and even like Johnny Depp, I didn't ever feel like, oh, this isn't Johnny Depp. This is Whitey Bulger. I never really felt that.
Well, yeah, because we become so inured to Johnny Depp in weird makeup and costumes and stuff.
He's always got an accent. Like, whatever kind of accent it is, it's always there. Something's goofy about him.
And he's not like Gary Oldman, where, like, he disappears. Like, I went to the North American premiere of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Gary Oldman's in that. He's the main character. Mm-hmm. And when it was over, he and the director were actually up on stage answering questions. And my girlfriend at the time turned to me and said, who was that? Who was he in the movie? And I said, that's Gary Oldman. She's like, what? And I was like, yeah, that's George Smiley. That's the main character. And she said, that's him? And then I said, let me blow your mind further. He's Detective Gordon in the Batman films. And she legitimately screamed out, what the fuck is he a shapeshifter? Whereas Johnny Depp always manages to shine through his Johnny Deppedness,
right,
no matter how much stuff you put on him.
There was a point in this movie, too, where I find myself laughing so much at stuff I shouldn't be laughing at, where I actually wrote down in my notes, this is a farce. Like, this entire movie is just a farce. And
do you remember that scene? Are we going to be able to get to that?
There was a scene where there was a couple scenes, but I will say, like, the one scene that really made me do it was when Joel Edgerton and his wife, Joel Edgerton's character Connolly and his wife Marianne, are arguing in the kitchen, and she goes to interrupt him, but she just, like, meh.
Oh yeah, that
makes
was good.
This noise where it's like, you couldn't retake that, Scott Cooper. You couldn't do another take.
Scott Cooper, who I just looked up because I was like, who is this guy? What else has he directed? He did Crazy Heart. Out of the Furnace.
Yep.
Out of the Furnace.
Out of the Furnace, filmed in Pittsburgh.
Because it looks like it's the post-apocalypse.
Yep, it's in Braddock.
Yeah. And Out of the Furnace is great. And Out of the Furnace has very strong, like, human characters. Like, the scene on the bridge between Christian Bale and Zoe Saldana? Is that who's in that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that scene destroyed me.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard bad things
about that movie.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. Okay. And this movie couldn't reach that. And I guarantee it's because it has too many characters, it has no real story, and it's going over 20 years, and it's like I said, it's skipping process. They just have to keep saying, oh, you're changing because...
Oh, yeah, there's a voiceover because it's wrapped in these confessions from all of his associates, including, like, Jesse Plemons. There's two other guys.
I actually like the way that was kind of done.
I liked it. It was fine, but it's more... It's just basically voiceover.
Sure, yeah.
Right. It was like an excuse to do a low-rent casino or Goodfellas.
And also, I just hate imagining that the FBI is just a bunch of massholes and macho dickheads arguing all day long.
He's because an infamant. He's a valuable infamant.
Like, he's like, you can't fucking tell me.
Well, like, here's the... What? There could have been tension in this if I understood why John Connolly, the FBI agent played by Joel Edgerton, was doing what he was doing.
Because Whitey helped him out of a scrape when he was a kid.
But, like, they never talk like old friends. They never talk like, you know, they're actually getting anything mutually beneficial. Like, if this John guy just acted on all the other intelligence that they'd get, he'd be an even bigger hero than he already was. Like, there's no sense to his character's actions. It's just weird.
It's just, and it's also like, going back to the whole Benedict Cumberbatch as his brother is very, it is very unbelievable. There's that scene where he's like, little Johnny Connolly, when Joel Edgerton walks in, and I'm like, oh no, Benedict Cumberbatch, you were very miscast for this.
You're the hotshot FBI here. Up from New Jersey.
I will say, I think his and Johnny Depp's accents are at least consistent with each other. Like, it does. So they just have this almost like very low, gravelly, almost like barely coherent delivery where it's still kind of a Boston accent.
Yeah.
It's bad.
So I guess that's, you know, Amanda and I have kind of melded our reviews together. Bill's. Is there anything, like, outside of what we've talked about that you wanted to dive into on the mess of this film?
So one thing that I want to say is, A, the trailer is spectacular compared to the film.
Which trailer? I love it. Like the one where they're at the dinner table?
The one that you just played. Oh, okay. The one with that song that I have downloaded via Spotify. give us money. Anyways, so... The trailer is much more dramatic, much more fun, fast-paced, moving, exciting. Mm-hmm. Nothing about this film does any of that stuff to me. I think one thing that I was fascinated by is just the simple – the amount of cast in this film is outrageous.
I agree.
And like I said, I don't think – there needs to be half of them. It almost seems like there's movie stars in this film for movie star's sake. They don't do a whole lot. You know, they have good screen presence, and you know, I think everybody's pretty much doing really well in this film overall, but it doesn't amount to anything.
I have to imagine there's like a 3-hour cut somewhere.
Oh yeah,
where like Kevin Bacon like beats the shit out of Joel Edgerton, and Adam Scott like pulls a gun on someone in the office. You know, there's got to be something like that.
The FBI is just part of pure bedlam.
Yeah,
the other thing about this film is, as I was watching it, I was never surprised by anything that happens.
No,
everything is either telegraphed or literally nothing. Nothing surprising happens. Like just the way the film flows, you're like, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, this is going to happen. Oh, that guy's going to die. Okay, so this is going to happen. And it's for 2 hours of movie, it felt like 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
In the wrong direction, right? Like you weren't like glued to your seat and being like, oh my God, how long was that movie? No, this is, when does this movie end?
Oh my God. When Corey Stoll, again, another actor that my fiance hates. When Corey, he hates Corey Stoll. I know. Hey, man, I don't know what to tell you. He hates, except for in Midnight in Paris. That's the only.
Oh, yeah, he's great in that when he plays Hemingway.
Hemingway.
Beautiful.
Wonderful in that movie.
Amazing.
So, but when Corey Stoll shows up, my fiance made a good point. He's like, he's basically a proxy for the audience. Because he's the one who, when Joel Edgerton walks into his office giving him those Red Sox tickets, and he starts grilling him about Whitey Bulger and why they haven't brought him in, and he starts, you know, stammering and can't come up with any good answers, and he's like, I don't want to hear it. And I was like, yes! Finally! Someone told Connolly to shut the hell up!
Someone's working on the audience's side, finally.
I mean, oh, it was wonderful.
This is a thing that has been a problem with a couple of movies that I've seen recently, where it's just like, I think to myself, could you cut out the first 30 to 40 minutes of this and start at a better place and just be able to fill
there
in
is
with
no
just a little,
starting
bit of,
place.
A little bit of background?
There's not a whole lot of this movie that I think is salvageable, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, you could make it.
It's shot really well. It's acted really well. Some of the dialogue is
I think,
like, some of the sequences are like when Johnny Depp, some of the Johnny Depp sequences are really, really good. But
I'll give him the hospital scene with Dakota Johnson.
The hospital scene is great. When he talks to Joel Edgerton's wife is great.
But here's no, I don't know.
That whole thing
I like that.
I think I said this in another podcast before. I don't know if it was you guys or somebody else, but another pet
Can
peeve I have with films.
Straight. It's cool.
I'm sorry.
Whatever, man.
The thing where people are like, the Stepping creepy out. Hand, when I'm going to creepily touch your face with my hand.
I'm going to just John Travolta all over you.
I hate it so much.
Here's my thing.
Hold on. Do you hate it because it's revolting, or do you hate it because it's just the creepy thing to do? And
it's an easy creepy thing to do. It's like, okay. I'm gonna very gently rub the outside
That's
of my
why it was
pinky
so
finger
bizarre
on your face
when John Travolta did it at the Oscars.
Beautiful.
You're like, I've only seen this in movies, and he's probably gonna gut her. You don't get a lot of interaction between Whitey and John. For as much as this movie is about John covering Whitey and Whitey running roughshod over him.
Well, they do kind of make a point of the fact that Whitey is like, we can't talk. Like, I can't be seen around you.
Right.
But they're together all the time.
I know.
But then the problem, then he takes him to friggin' Miami. But what I'm saying is, it's like they realized they had that problem. And so they had this dinner scene that then involved, in any other movie, these two scenes would be split up. First, there's the threatening dinner conversation. And then he's like, okay, I've already freaked out you guys. Now I'm going to go up and freak out your wife.
Like, who's reading The Exorcist,
do it.
By the way?
What was that?
She's like reading The Exorcist in her bedroom.
Oh, is she?
Was she really?
She is, yeah.
I was trying to see what that book was.
That's how bored I was because I was just like, what is she reading?
And here's the thing, like, there's the movie itself, the title is Black Mass,
yeah,
which feels like it's ooh, it's going to play into the Irish side of him. Like, you know, because that was something that apparently he was really strong about, in his connection to a predominantly Irish working class neighborhood. And it wasn't there. Like, they didn't even do like a too much kind of Catholicism thing. Well, like, so Black Mass, unless they're talking about Massachusetts, doesn't really mean much.
Did you forget the IRA part?
Oh, yeah, I did, because it was 2 minutes.
Okay, well, like, you know, it does seem like he focused a lot of attention on that, though.
He's got his fingers in so many pies. He's got his finger in the High Lie game, got his finger in the IRA game, got his finger in the...
If this movie
fingers
had started
and pies,
off,
just...
If this
so
movie
pies.
Had started off where he starts working with the IRA... Then you could have moved forward from there. But instead, we start off with him threatening peanut munchers, and then just, I don't know, I hated this movie. I mean, like, I didn't hate
it. I hated it.
It's fine-ish, but it's such a waste of opportunity.
I think
here's what it is. Yeah, it is completely inoffensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
In so many ways.
It's a movie about Whitey Bulger. That shouldn't be something you can say.
Well, yeah. And the thing was, there were so many moments in this film where something would happen... Or you knew it was trying to build tension or suspense, and there's always moments in films where it's almost like a pause. It's not really a pause, but it feels like it because it's going for a certain dramatic effect. And that movie definitely had it, where it would sort of close in on someone's face. I'm talking about like the first time he and Jesse Plemons beat up on that guy, and there's this moment where it just like closes in on Jesse Plemons' face, and Jesse Plemons realizes like, oh, okay, I have to beat him up too. And you're supposed to feel, it's almost supposed to be like, ooh, this is chilling. Ooh, he's getting sucked into this. Or, and then there's that, like, just, there's so many times in that, there's so many moments in this film where it's reaching for chilling, but it's just for show. It doesn't actually evoke that.
Yeah.
I think this film is just so generic. It's just like a by the numbers. Even the way it's shot, I felt like it was such a by the numbers, like cut and paste gangster film. Because there was all the scenes of like, you know, two guys standing together really close, and there's a wide shot, and then the wide shot slowly, you know, it slowly zooms in on them as their conversation gets more and more intense.
The one like standout sequence is when they're listening to the recording of the Angulo family. And, you know, they'd just been about to pull the plug on Whitey, and they finally hear the Angulos, like, copping to everything they're doing. And Joel Edgerton is, like, dancing.
What is he doing?
It's the worst dance.
The way that the scene is staged, the way it kind of tells you something about everyone who's in it, that's good. Everything
but
else,
again, there's
not
no
so much.
Build up to it. There's no like emotional impact at all.
Oh no!
From
it's
that.
Like in a postmodern sitcom where it's like, oh great, now the only thing we need is for someone to rush in and tell us that the building is on fire, and then someone bursts in and says the building's on fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because like because they're all fighting over Whitey, and then that unnamed FBI agent says, "Hey guys, I got it. I got the tape." Like, it's so ridiculous. I don't think Scott Cooper is a good director. I just have to say that right now.
Okay, you can say that.
I just because Crazy Heart, I think, got good reviews initially, and really rode on his first film, and really rode on Jeff Bridges' performance.
Right. Well, but that's the thing. I think that the performances that he's gotten have covered up a lot of his perhaps defects. And here, unfortunately, they went for the most actor instead of the best actor.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, man, this movie. So this is a rough. This is a very. And it didn't even make me mad. It just. I feel nothing for this movie. I feel nothing for it, and I think that's the biggest insult to any movie is when you can't even like when we did the Queen of Earth podcast. Feeling anger is better. Like, it is more of a compliment for a director than feeling nothing.
I guess.
It is.
I'd rather watch this than Queen of Earth again.
Oh, no.
I'd rather not watch this.
Man, that's a tough... That's a
I'd rather
tough
not goal. Watch either. Can I eat some peanuts out of a bowl
I
that we're
mentally...
all sharing together?
can I just take cyanide?
Look at this film and, like, reconstruct it to make it better. I just want to burn Queen of Earth to the ground.
But see, that's a compliment to Queen of Earth that you had such an emotional reaction. But it is, because it is. Because to have such...
I'm sorry, if someone murders your family in front of you, is that a compliment that they got an emotional reaction out of you? I felt something about murdering my family.
Yeah, I think what Manon is getting to is if it gets you to do one or the other, praise it or hate it, it's at least doing something. Being this kind of middle ground of just being like, well, that was the movie.
But I will never go back to the movie I hate.
Sure, no.
But it's like, it's almost like bad publicity is good publicity, kind of kind of thing, where it's just like, if you feel absolutely...
You would tell someone that you hated it, and they might be curious to go watch it because of that.
Which happened, by the way.
Did it?
Yeah, that guy who commented on our Queen of Earth podcast. Yeah, that's true. But it is, like...
Did he hate it equally as much?
He never said.
No, he didn't say.
What? What the hell?
But yeah, it's like...
He was going to watch it because he was shocked by how much I hated it. Or something.
But I forgot about this movie as soon as I watched it.
Yep.
As soon as I left the theater, it was like wiped from my memory, pretty much. Like, that's just how little I felt for it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I like how Whitey Bulger has apparently come out and like disagreed with his performance in this film.
Yeah,
And I'm like, who the fuck screened it for Whitey Bulger? Like, how did that happen?
He's a man who
he's in prison. What the fuck?
He's serving like 2 life sentences plus five years.
Just in case.
Those 5 years, man. They're going to be rough. Those last 5.
Do it again.
I don't know. It's just weird. It's a weird film, and I don't know.
It's just weird that they couldn't produce this should have been like, you know, this should have been like a Scorsese film. This should have been, you know, and the thing about Scorsese's depiction of gangsters is that he goes for it. I mean, it is
That's the other thing about this film is that even it's violent in little bits, but it's not actually all that violent. Like, if you look at a Scorsese mobster film, holy crap. You go watch Goodfellas, you go watch some of
and it's motivated
movies.
By something. Like, the violence is like,
but it's also meant to shock in the way that it's meant to shock, right? Meant to shock you because it's violence. It's someone dying and it's you know, their life leaving their body and you're like, whoa. And in this film, every single death is just like,
well, like,
okay.
I was terrified of Frank Costello in The Departed. I didn't feel anything regarding like Whitey Bulger being in a room. And maybe part of that's because every time he walks into a room with someone, they die.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like when Juno Temple dies,
I guess
she's being choked to death. Oh, who fucking cares? This movie sucked. But like when Juno Temple dies, it's not actually showing her death. He's choking her to death. But she's making... It's off screen, and it's just her stepfather, who is Bulger's.
Rory Cochran.
Yeah. I can't remember his. I got 2 of the guys confused constantly throughout the entire movie.
Rory Cochran and the Hitman.
I got them confused all the time because they look almost the same.
This is the other thing about this kind of film is they will mention somebody, they will mention a tie, and then they will never show that person and say the name at the same time again. And so all of a sudden, if you didn't quite catch it the first time, you're fucking lost. Like they talk about these guys all the time and they never show their face. And you're like, I guess I understand what he's talking about, but I don't quite remember.
And again, rarely show them doing anything. It's always them talking about themselves or their situation, but you never see anything.
But yeah, but like, again, that goes finishing my thought on Juno Temple. When she dies, you just hear these ridiculous, like, it almost sounds like someone like playing dead in the most over the top way possible, which is like,
I can see Cooper off screen like, more, give me more.
Give me more of that.
I kept thinking to myself, like, no wonder it's taking her so long to die. If she can speak that well, you're not choking her effectively.
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's
not
funny because I've been listening to a podcast called Undisclosed, which is talking about
cereal. You
listen
to a podcast other than this one?
Yeah.
Where's the goddamn loyalty in this fucking family?
Anyways, they talk about what it actually takes to suffocate someone, like to literally choke them to death. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the initial choke. No, you have to keep pressure on them because otherwise your body will literally resuscitate itself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you will just wake back up. So, again, it's like I just wish she would have just like sat there on her neck for like the next 2 minutes and been
that
like.
That would have been chilling.
Yeah.
If
looking
seen
at
him
you,
on top
right?
of her, just like still strangling her, and the other guy's like, for God's sake, Whitey, she's dead. And he's like, nah, you gotta really make sure. And just like has a conversation. And he's like,
on top
he's
of
like,
her.
What do you think about them sacks?
I think the Celtics are gonna go far this season.
Oh my, you got tickets? You got an extra one for me?
But yeah, there's so many scenes where like they try to give him a human form, but it's always people talking. He's just standing threateningly, and people are like, oh, he's not carrying his ma because he didn't want to sully the family name. Or, oh, he wasn't the same after his bye died. And it's just like, for fuck's sake, like, why don't you show us some of this instead of fucking talking our ears off about it?
He doesn't change.
No, he's always a sociopath.
What? He becomes more of a sociopath? I don't think so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he doesn't get worse.
No, he starts at shark. And then becomes shark with slightly less hair.
Aww. So gross. I will say, though, as we were talking about this before this, the podcast, Bulger's got a nice butt. Johnny Depp, man.
He's living up to the bulge.
And bringing it in the butt department.
They called him Bulger because of his tight, tight jeans.
His jeans were so tight, and his butt was so prominent.
I never noticed.
Oh my god.
I noticed. It's because he's wearing one of those coats that like stops at the waist, which is a coat that just kind of says, yeah, but look a little further and you'll see where it's at.
Oh yeah. Well, he's also wearing cowboy boots, which kind of, you know, boost it a little bit. You know, step that butt.
Yeah.
Put it on display.
Legs out with those heels.
I was like, should I feel bad that I'm looking at a psycho murderer's ass and thinking like, that's pretty good.
No, because it's Johnny Depp.
It tight.
Yeah, man.
You saw those Johnny crunches Depp. He was doing.
Those that butt, man. Johnny okay. Depp. Unless it's okay. Unless he's also doing
maybe,
that. You
maybe
know,
that's what Whitey was
in there.
Like, maybe that's right. What Whitey was mad about. He was like, no. Too big.
My butt is flat. I got a flat butt. It's concave. No butt there.
Concave.
It's not accurate.
So I guess
I've had a butt since 78.
Let's I'm gonna try to wrap this up now so we can stop talking about Johnny Depp's ass. The bulge in Bulger. His eyes were distracting too. I'll just throw that out there.
So, and I've seen pictures of Freddy Bulger. He doesn't have like cataracts. But he looks like he has cataracts.
He does. Yes, he looks like he's got a cold glaucoma over his eye. And his pupils never move.
He looks like Voldemort.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't pay enough attention.
There's a lot of reviews that just speculate that Bulger in this film is actually just a vampire.
Yeah, it's possible.
I was ready for him to just like chomp on someone's neck.
Maybe that's what he did to Juno Temple.
Maybe that is what he did to Juno Temple.
Oh my god, he is a vampire.
That's why it's called Black Mass.
Guys. All right,
this movie's more interesting now.
Maybe that's why he has that whitish complexion, because he's got so much, stuff all over his skin.
I think that's just massive.
Oh, you like
sunscreen?
Yeah, about the sunscreen. Yeah, I got you.
We go to Miami. You think you get a little bit of sun in Miami?
Well,
not if you're playing highlight indoors all fucking time.
Yeah.
Which I wish they would have expanded that highlight a little bit more, because it's like. That is the one part in this movie where I was like, I could use a little bit more voiceover. Just a little bit more explaining this. Because this is actually interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the funny part about highlight is
make a mobster,
if you don't if you don't know what High Life was and how big it was for a little while and how fast it just crashed and burned, you'd be like, what the fuck is – I've never heard of this. What is High Life?
I know about it most because of Mad Men.
That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering why I knew so much about it, and thank you for giving me that.
You're welcome.
Well, I remember when I was in elementary school – of course, we had very old books, and one of them was about the new American sport, High Life. It was this like children's like like hardback book about High Life,
straight from Whitey Bulger.
That and that episode of Archer where he's in Miami.
Oh yeah. Oh, man.
I'm gonna give my final summary judgment. Very uneven performances with very uneven accents, and
the accents are terrible.
And without the process, a person even as crazy as Whitey Bulger just isn't that interesting. Because he's basically, here's a static character that we're just going to place in different settings, killing different people as people say different things about him. But he hasn't done anything to really amp up our interest in him. So with the scope that they were going for and the amount of characters, it just diluted everything and everyone to the point that there was nothing.
Oh yeah, spoiler, Bulger gets caught.
Yeah, for people who weren't paying attention to the news a couple years ago.
And so does Connolly.
I did not know about that much of it. I wasn't aware of like the whole Connolly angle, but I'm like, well, this guy's going down in flames.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah,
and the, them coming to get him, I don't know what emotional reaction we were supposed to have, if we were supposed to feel bad for him.
I don't know if he's like a fallen hero. I don't know how to feel
about. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about anybody in this film.
He's like a sad. Like,
you are all dumb. You go to jail.
Everyone's stupid.
At least for Billy Bulger, who it's like, oh, he lost his state senate seat, but he became the chancellor of UMass, but he lost that.
Everyone in this movie is an idiot until Corey Stoll's character shows up and just basically says, hey guys, what are you doing? And then it just, that's it. And then that,
yeah, pretty much.
Like, it's as simple as that.
Just kind of slaps them upside the back of the head and just like, hey.
It's like, he doesn't even
pay attention.
He has like 50 files on his desk and he's just like, Bulger, why? No. And
which,
then that's
again,
it.
Would have been a great place to begin the movie. Corey Stoll walks in on his first day. What's up with Whitey Bulger? And everyone's like, ah, it was it. And then they look into it, and you can fill in a little bit of a backstory. You know, he can figure out how did this guy become this big in the first place? And then you get to skip over all the bullshit. You can even do like a chilling reveal of the fact that John is working with Whitey. And then you catch him. Like,
that would have been amazing.
3 weeks later.
Yeah, you could do like basically the FBI turns on Whitey, and so now he's on the run.
Right.
You could make that movie.
Wow, that would have been so much more interesting.
Thank you. I'm gonna pitch that.
That's everything right there.
Yep.
That's how simple it would have been to like fix this movie. Like,
thanks for insulting my intelligence, I guess. So simple, even Brian Rowan thought of it.
Even Brian Rowan.
That's it. Does anyone else have anything to say about this film? Go watch The Departed instead.
Don't fucking see it.
Go watch Sicario. Wait a little while.
Sicario's out in some places already, isn't it?
Yep. New York and LA. It's got like 6 theaters.
Everest, I believe, is similarly already out there.
Yep.
Yeah. I have a feeling I will not be joining you on the Everest podcast. Because I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to find someone to take
I don't really
place,
like that
and you
director.
Can go do another podcast and then forget if it was us or them.
Ooh.
Fine.
Good.
I will. I'm also getting married.
Oh, yeah. When is that happening?
I think I'm getting married that week. I don't know if I can talk about Everest.
You know, if you'd led with that.
Brilliant.
No, I am getting married pretty soon here, so... hopefully it will be the Everest podcast, not the Sicario podcast.
Are we going to have to call you something else?
It's Everest next week, Sicario the week to Dalo, maybe, I think.
What is it?
Sure.
I can't remember. I honestly can't remember.
I don't know. Yeah.
We'll figure it out. I know that the next two are Everest and Sicario in some formation.
Okay.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Well, that's it. What's coming out to DVD and Blu-ray. Moonrise Kingdom is hitting blue on Criterion, so definitely pick that up. Mm. Pitch Perfect 2, which I wrote a review for our site, I think.
Did you love it?
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. that's about it. The Indian in the Cupboard.
Oh.
If anyone remembers that movie.
I don't know if y'all heard, but apparently Lucasfilm via John Landis is actually releasing the theatrical versions of the first three Star Wars films. Yep.
Really?
On Blu-ray.
When?
According to John Landis, who is just like, why the fuck am I hearing this from John Landis?
Well, let's keep hope alive.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
And apparently they're going to be hitting theaters again as well.
I would have anticipated that. Yeah.
Well, this is the time to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, Results is also on Blu-ray.
Yay!
I was expecting that.
Yeah. Kevin Corrigan, who I saw in a very early role in a movie called Kiss of Death, where he gets the shit kicked out of him by Rappaport? Michael Rappaport.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got to see him recently in an episode of Community.
Oh, really?
Are you still watching Community?
Yeah.
On Yahoo?
Oh, no, I'm going back and rewatching.
Oh, okay.
My girlfriend's never seen it, so I was like, guess what we're going to watch?
Oh, yeah.
I will say, I was into that show for a couple seasons, and then I totally lost me.
That's your prerogative. As soon as
he left, I was like, whoa.
Oh, it was before he left.
The fifth season was really good. Anyway, let's wrap up. This is crazy. Why are we talking about Community?
Getting late.
Bill Graham, where can we find you now that Hannibal's been canceled?
Not on NBC anymore.
No.
You can find me at the Film Stage, and you can find me on Twitter at CableBFG.
And Amanda Waltz.
You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz, also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and you can find my blog about Pittsburgh film culture, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
Is it going to change from Media Waltz?
Why is that? Should it? Is she
getting married?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not changing my name.
Was it Nick who really awkwardly asked you that?
No.
No. Oh, he was talking to someone else and was like, "Are they changing names?" And they were like, "Well, since it's not the 1950s, no."
Yeah, I'm not changing my last. My friend who's getting married the weekend after me, also is not changing her name, and we had a great conversation at my bachelorette party about how our family members are really weird about that. Some of them.
It's 2015. Gay marriage is legal. Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping my maiden name, bitch. Oh, man.
Plus, this is what I always say. Like, if you've got a cool name, stick with it.
Yeah.
I have a great name.
Yeah, Waltz ain't bad.
Waltz is a good name. People love it. And I can say to people that Christoph Waltz is my distant relative.
And they'll probably believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. All right.
He may be for real.
He might be. Yeah. Go back far enough. I can be found on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. Of course, you can find me on thefilmstage.com and my personal site, dearfilm.net. I will be posting my review of Sicario just as soon as the embargo is up. Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. And that's about all. Next week we'll be talking about Everest or Sicario, so tune in to find out which it is. That is that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next week.